Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good evening. You are listening to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and tonight we speak with some journalists investigating and reporting on the year's most intriguing, upsetting, and encouraging stories and cases that made headlines throughout the country this year. From the ongoing saga of the Casey Anthony case in Orlando to the happy ending that we all saw this week in Utah with the strength and courage of a victim-turned-survivor with the Elizabeth Smart case, to the upsetting news of a fellow publicist, Ronnie Chasen, that was shot and killed in Beverly Hills. Stories that made headlines, to cases that pulled our heartstrings. One thing that 2010 saw was an ongoing busy year for reporters and journalists and media. Tonight, we will review the news and get our panel's views. The phone lines will be open shortly. Our panel will be taking your calls. The number is 347-838-8622. Again, that number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open live. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click chat. We are honored to have with us tonight investigator reporter Michelle Sigona. Michelle can be seen often on CNN, HLN, MSNBC, and Inside Edition. Michelle has covered hundreds of breaking and historical news stories, including the Stacey Peterson case, Kaylee Anthony case, and the international search for missing toddler Madeline McCann. Michelle is also a victims advocate and an advocate for women and girls. Michelle will be presenting this year at the 3rd Annual Northwest Conference Against Trafficking in Portland, Oregon, and we will be honored to speak with Michelle in a little while. We also have Rosie Franco. Rosie is an investigative reporter out of Florida and made headlines herself in the ongoing coverage of the Kaylee Casey case in Orlando. Rosie can be seen often on Issues with Jane Velez Mitchell on HLN, Fox News, MSNBC, and Court Television. While with WDBO News Talk Radio, Rosie broke the story of a woman in Broward County, Florida, filing for temporary restraining order against New England Patriots NFL superstar Randy Moss. Since then, Rosie continues to be a voice for the truth and a voice against the war on women. She just recently joined Soroptimus International, and she will also be back this year for a second year in the row for the Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking this year in January, along with Michelle. We also will have Levi Page, host of the Levi Page Show on Blog Talk Radio. His show can be heard now 5 nights a week on blogtalkradio.com/Levi Page. From covering Casey Anthony to Ronnie Chasen to Zahra Baker, his show tackles all the headlines and with an ongoing large audience of hundreds. The Levi Page Show has also been a Blog Talk Radio featured one-hour crime-based program, which has opened doors for Levi to become a correspondent on Nancy Grace and the Jane Velez Mitchell Show. And we welcome our guests this evening. Levi, Rosie, and Michelle, are you all with us?
I'm here with you.
I'm here. Thank
Hi,
you for
Rosie.
Having me.
Levi. Do we have Michelle on the line also? Okay. Well, welcome everyone. I want to, you know, let's start this show off because news usually is bad news. So let's start off with the Elizabeth Smart case. Rosie, and I know Levi, you've been covering it. How does that make you all feel when, you know, we cover so many bad things throughout the year that all of a sudden eight years it took to see Elizabeth Smart with a smile on her face and justice prevail? How does that feel as a journalist, Rosie?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I think personally it would have probably taken a lot longer. I mean, these victims are traumatized and sometimes, oftentimes, never reach any kind of recovery, if, you know, even full recovery. But, I mean, personally, it's nice to see Elizabeth Smart have a smile on her face. You know, she went through a very traumatic experience. So, I mean, personally, it feels good to actually see that.
It sure does. And Levi, how about your take on that particular case?
Well, one thing that I thought was very interesting is I watched an interview that Elizabeth Smart's father, Ed Smart, had given on Jane Velez Mitchell's show on HLN, and he said that Elizabeth Smart was thinking about going to law school to become a prosecutor after this experience in this case, and that she would want to help other victims by telling her story and by prosecuting these criminals. And I think that it's a good thing that there was a guilty verdict in this case, because this guy was obviously an actor. He tried to make everyone believe that he was insane, that he was not responsible for the murders, and he would go in front of the courtroom and start singing, and they would remove him from the courtroom. And as soon as he was removed from the courtroom, he would stop singing. So it was obvious to everybody who followed this case, even if they didn't follow it that much, that this guy was acting and putting on a show. Elizabeth Smart even testified, and she said that this guy was not a religious fanatic, that he was crude, vulgar. He was an alcoholic. He was on drugs. He raped her, and that he never talked much about religion whenever she was with him.
Yeah, and to add to that, you know, it's funny that she's talking about becoming a prosecutor now. Not funny, but it's actually really interesting, because now that she's gone through this horrific experience and these victims, these traumatized victims, almost never make it out, she's actually got this experience that she can take with her, and when she goes into work for the state and she actually goes in to cover these cases and investigate these cases and prosecute these cases. So ultimately, this was a win. Definitely his conviction was a win, and I think it's just an amazing story altogether.
So, Rosie, you cover these stories a lot. What is the reason behind having to wait until May for the sentencing?
Well, that's not the sentencing. That's just the trial. Remember, we have the trial phase, and then we have the sentencing phase after. I think what's ultimately at play here, Michelle, is the media. A lot of this has been held up by the media. I mean, we literally got a judge removed because of a conflict with a blogger. Then we had to have another judge put in place. I mean, all of this takes time. We know that Jose Baez took a long time putting his witness list together.
Oh, you're
together,
talking on the Casey case.
On the Casey Anthony case specifically, yeah. Because you talked about May, and then that triggered the Casey Anthony case, and that's what I thought you were referring to. Which case are you referring to?
To Elizabeth, why is the sentencing so, you know, it may not seem too far off, but why wouldn't they just do the sentencing in January on a particular case of this nature?
I actually don't know the answer to that. Maybe you can ask Levi.
Levi?
Probably because the court system is backed up there. And they have a lot of things going on. That's the only place that they could.
Yeah, I
kind
of thought that too. But I mean, that's
Utah?
The only other thing I can think of.
It is federal court, so that could be. And hopefully, we'll be seeing a lot of other cases tried and then convictions made. Especially in that case, the wife still has to go up, correct?
Yeah, the wife still has to be sentenced, and I may be incorrect on this, but I think that part of the wife, she made a deal with the prosecution that she would testify against her husband, but she never did testify against him. Instead, that she testified for him. So I think what would happen is the prosecutor, during her sentencing, can say she did not honor our agreement, our deal that we made, so therefore she should be sentenced to the maximum.
That makes sense. Well, shifting a little bit, it seems like on the West Coast here, lots have been has been going on this year. Are either of you comfortable talking about? I know Levi, you just recently did a show on the Ronnie Chasen case. I know I speak on behalf of many publicists like myself that that the press conference from the police just doesn't wash with us. You know, them claiming that she was gunned down by somebody on a bike, you know, in her Mercedes on that area. I'm from California, and I'll tell you, I'd have to converse with Jane and the likes of Howard Bragman and many others that that's just not doable. You know, and so
I agree with you. And their
what
theory
is the latest?
The theory is that this was a robbery gone bad, but in fact, her purse had not been stolen from her. Nothing from her Mercedes was stolen. So, you know, it could be possible, but I'm a little skeptical, like you are.
Well, what the police are saying, look, the media doesn't want to buy that this was a petty crook that committed a botched robbery. The media doesn't want that because the media wants to keep this a murder mystery because they want to sell publications. And that's what the police are saying. And that's a pretty strong statement for the police to say. I mean, we're talking about a murder investigation here. When I read all the details, my number one question was, who wanted to kill Ronnie Chasen and why? And that's still my number one question. Because I felt there's a motive from somewhere here. And this individual, I believe they nabbed Smith. This is the individual they're pointing the finger at and saying that this was just a petty robbery, this Brandon Smith, I believe. And there's
Harold
some other
Smith, yes.
Harold Smith, rather. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's my sentiment on it, and it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't add up. And when the police make such a strong statement like that, you just kind of, you know, that's a huge red flag. But that's their investigation, and, you know, ultimately that's where it lies.
You know,
I thought
also
it was ironic that the police officer that was doing the press conference, he indicated in the beginning that it's 80% or percentage likely that DNA is a match. But by the end of the press conference, he then said, yes, it is a match. Well, what is it? You know,
well,
how did you change your mind
that,
during...
Yeah, Michelle, there's that too, and then there's approximately 5 gunshot wounds to the chest.
And where's the shell casing?
Right, and I don't know if, you know, when you deal with petty robberies and you deal with investigators and you talk to them, 5 gunshot wounds to rob someone doesn't seem plausible. I mean, that definitely, you probably need a criminal profiler on here, but that I think would be common sense to anyone, would be someone with a motive
and
to
someone. I agree with that. That's a good point. You know, what's also interesting is in her will, she had put very specific things. She wanted to be buried in New York. She wanted certain music played at her funeral, but yet none of those wishes were carried out by her brother. I forgot his name, but he's also a famous Hollywood director in Hollywood. He directed the movie Cellular and Phone Booth, and he did not carry out any of her wishes after she died. She was not buried in New York City. She did not have the music that she wanted played at her funeral played there, and he immediately came out and spoke out to the New York Times and E! News that he thought that this was a road rage crime, and he immediately said that he didn't think that Harold Smith was guilty. The guy that killed himself was guilty of shooting his sister, and that had a lot of people very suspicious. And I know that there was a Robin Sachs, a prosecutor and now an attorney in that area, was on Good Morning America, and she said that people that were at Ronnie Chasen's funeral said that this guy acted very odd and he wasn't that emotional. Now, I don't know how the playbook for people to act, but those are just some interesting things. I'm not saying this guy did it, but it's just some interesting things to ponder.
Yeah, and that's always
well,
something.
Well, the brother's daughter, wasn't she left out of the will? Or let me rephrase that. She was left in the will, but only got $10.
Yes, her name is Jill Gatsby.
But yet her sister, his other daughter, got a lot of more money. So it almost appeared as if, okay, you got yours while I was alive. You owed me thousands of dollars before I die, so you're out of my will. Here's $10, and that's sending you a message.
And I can see that theory. I can see that theory being where there's a motive. But, I mean, there's a lot of theories surrounding this one. I mean, mm-hmm. this one's got a lot of folks perplexed. And I'll tell you, I don't care what the police department says down there. They may want to close this investigation, but the media is not going to let that happen. There's just too many red
flags
surrounding it.
I hope the media doesn't let that happen. Yeah, I hope the media doesn't let that happen, because I'll tell you, there is no way, and I'm not a forensic expert or a profiler or anything. We can have Pat Brown on next time, but you cannot tell me that a homeless man that's always drunk or doing drugs or whatever they said he was known to do could drive a bike one hand and shoot a car five times and point blank catch her, and yet then all of a sudden the car crashes, causes an uproar, and people are coming out left and right to see what happened, and he's there picking up the shell casings. No way. I can't see it happening. Plus, what kind of a gun was it?
Yeah, well, I don't think you're alone. I mean, I don't think a lot of people can see that happening. A lot of these facts have raised a lot of red flags, and I'm looking right now because I had that put down. I think the coroner said the report noted that there were hollow point bullets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what gun that would come
from. It was
from.
A 9mm gun.
A 9mm. Okay.
Hollow point bullets, which has a tip on it, which helps it penetrate through tissue much faster. And a lot of people were saying that is something that a professional hitman would use. But from what I've been told, anybody can go to their local Walmart and buy hollow tip bullets. So that's not that big of a
really?
Deal. Mm-hmm.
But I'm not familiar with guns. Only shot one in my entire life once. But I can remember it was a small little gun that my dad was teaching us at a gun place to shoot, and I was only like 18, but boy, did I fly backwards. Are you telling me that it depends on the size of the gun, or do all guns fire backwards? You know, like, don't you have to be steady?
Well, I talked to Pat Brown, who's a criminal profiler, and she says that these type of guns that was used is carried often by people, especially women, for protection. So I don't think that this would make people kick back after they've shot the gun.
I gotcha. Very interesting. Yeah, I'm not, and I can speak on behalf of some fellow publicists that I've spoken with. We just don't believe it. You know, it seems it's too cut and dry. It seems too coincidental that he killed himself. Grant you, he may have killed himself.
Journalists are going to do. I mean, let me tell you, it's an interesting story. It's definitely a murder mystery, and there's going to be a few journalists that are going to do the background research, and they're going to find out. I mean, that's on the West Coast. I have other stories here in true crime that I'm dealing with. I mean, I'm not going to go over there and do the background, but I'll tell you, there's going to be some people that are certainly interested, if not friends. And just family, and there'll be some more information surfacing around it. I mean, there's just too little information out there right now to even really get some kind of closure out of what happened to this woman.
Yeah, it's a very sad story, very sad, because she had just come back from the screening of Burlesque. Is that how the movie with Cher and Christina Aguilera, and was in a great mood, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really sad day that this would happen in Beverly Hills, and they would just write it off so quickly. And I hope the media does what media does best, and that is the best investigators I know are reporters. So kudos to all of you that are pushing for that. I know, Levi, you've had the Zahra Baker case on. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the Zahra Baker case and the history of it, just so that mm-hmm. the folks in our chat room and listening to the show get a little bit of background on it?
Sure. She was 10 years old. She was originally from Australia, but she moved here in 2008 after her father, Adam Baker, connected with Elisa Baker from North Carolina online. So they moved here to be with Elisa Baker in Hickory, North Carolina. And a lot of people surrounding the family have came forward and said that Elisa Baker was very abusive towards Zahra Baker. They say that she would hit her on a regular basis. There were pictures that were floated in the media that showed her with a black eye that was released to one of the morning shows. I think it was Good Morning America. Furthermore, they also said that she hit her so hard on at one time, Elisa Baker hit her, and she hit her prosthetic leg. Zahra's prosthetic leg. She survived from bone cancer. She had a prosthetic leg, and when she hit it, she actually broke her hand. And she would also, Elisa's other children have came out and spoken to the media, and they have said that their mother is crazy, that she had something wrong with her, that she would always make them pretend that they were sick, and she would force them to be in wheelchairs, and she would scoot them around in wheelchairs in public. She's also been described as someone who's a fanatical liar. She claimed that she had written songs for American Idol finalist Chris Daughtry. So that's what sort of person we're dealing with. And the husband, Adam Baker, many people are wondering why he's not been locked up, because recently some search warrants were released for public consumption, and they showed that this house was covered in blood. He was living in that house. If the house was covered in blood, he had to know that the house was covered in blood, which means that he knew what happened and was most likely part and parcel
in it. Just because he knows the house was covered in blood, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, doesn't mean he knows exactly what happened, unless I'm missing
a fact,
and you obviously know the facts in the case, so help me out with that one.
That wouldn't mean that he would know that his child is dead, and you don't get blood splatter all over the walls where they have to basically ransack the entire house and tear down the walls. That would mean that he would know that his child was dead. That,
so he was actually in the house the whole time?
He's the one that reported her missing. He's the one that reported her missing, and when he reported her
missing... She was going through puberty.
Yeah, because I'm actually just kind of getting caught up on this case. Do we know exactly how long the blood was on the wall? Do we know, like, the texture of the blood? Was it actually dried? Was it fresh?
I have not read that in the search warrants. We're not hearing how long it had been there, but we do know that they had to take the walls down because it had, quote, blood splatter.
Blood splatter. Now, in regards to that case, though, and we see this so much with so many cases, that people now are coming forward that saw all this abuse while she was alive, and yet no one ever went to authorities. Is that correct?
They did go to authorities. They reported it to Child Protective Services, and Child Protective Services investigated this, but they cleared her, which has a lot of people scratching their head. Someone from Zahra's
they cleared John Gardner too, but
yes, and someone from Zahra's public school, I think it was the principal, even went to the house after hearing rumors of abuse. She even went to the house, and then after that, Elisa Baker pulled her out of public school and then started homeschooling her. And not all homeschoolers are bad, and not all people that homeschool their children are bad,
No. But
that's often a sign that there's something hinky going on when they suddenly pull their children out of school when there's allegations of abuse.
Wow. And did any teachers see anything?
We don't know about that. All I know is that a school official, I forgot exactly what their title was, went to the home.
Okay. Well, we often see that, though. We often see Child Protective Services giving back children in cases where they probably shouldn't, based on our criteria. Now, whatever their criteria is, could be budget-related. I don't know. That's just me speculating.
I'm hoping Michelle Sagona will call in shortly, because I know she's been working on this case also. My main question is, now, Zahra Baker's leg obviously amputated at one point. This individual, this step-parent and father, they are under the suspicion that they killed Zahra, correct?
Yes, Elisa Baker's in jail because she confessed to police that she wrote a bogus ransom note saying that someone else had kidnapped Zarish. So she confessed to writing that bogus ransom note. And there's also a man by the name of Eric Gines who owns a murderabilia website. And basically what this dude does is that he writes murderers who are serving time in prison, and he puts their letters up on the internet and sells them. And he also sells the toenails and toenail clippings and hair and artwork of these killers on his website. And he got in contact with Elisa Baker, and Elisa Baker had told him that they just found Zara dead and that they never killed her, but what, quote, Adam Baker did after the fact was, quote, kind of horrific. And we do know that there were dogs that hit on a wood chipper, and I think there was some blood found along the wood chipper. We don't know if the blood has been identified as Zara's or what.
Okay, so, but speculation, as we see a lot of the time, or indication of, it's looking as if these two parents had something to do with cutting up this little girl and dismembering her and murdering her in some aspect along the way. And so my biggest question, I guess, tonight is, do we know for a fact that first Zara Baker ever had cancer and that her parents did not chop off her leg to get the sympathy vote? And secondly, do we know if mom plays a role in any aspect, her biological mom?
Well, to answer your first question, I'll tell you one thing. I mean, dismembered comes to mind. I mean, the fact that police were looking for latex gloves used while her body was actually dismembered raises a huge red flag. And the fact that she had a prosthetic leg makes me think, possibly she didn't have cancer. That's my first thought on your first question. And Levi, you can go on with the second question.
Well, I do know that the police did go to Australia and get medical records. And the prosthetic leg that they got, they tracked the serial number to Australia. And you have to get the prosthetic leg issued. I think that if they were in Australia, if they had cut off her leg to get her a prosthetic leg, then they would probably have been in jail in Australia for that. And I haven't heard anything.
They would have to be charged to go to jail, and that would have to actually be reported. I mean, if that actually happened. I'm not saying they cut the girl's leg off. I'm saying I understand Michelle's question because it's certainly questionable.
Well, I was under the impression that the prosthetic leg for this 10-year-old had been purchased in Australia. However, supposedly that she was seen by doctors in Tennessee or somewhere out east. Is that correct?
I have not heard that. All
okay.
I know is that they got medical records from Australia, and I think I don't know, but maybe if the whole cancer thing was fake, then I think maybe we would have heard about that by now.
Well,
wait
a minute. Sometimes we don't hear about those things until later. I mean, that could be a possibility.
Well, you heard about it from her daughters. You've heard about her daughter saying how she's psycho and she, what comes to mind is, what's it called, Munchausen
syndrome by proxy.
Proxy and all of this that come to mind, that this person had all these issues and all of a sudden, the mother didn't know she had cancer. She was given notice that, Zara has cancer. At least that's what she said in an interview.
We know Zara got the prosthetic leg from Australia. We know there are medical records. Do we know anywhere in the medical records, which I know are hard to come by, that a doctor actually diagnosed her with cancer? Do we have that anywhere written, anywhere reported, anywhere?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. Well, it is a very sad story,
I think that we would be able to tell if her leg had been removed, whether or not it had been done by a professional or someone like Elisa and Adam Baker via the autopsy.
Sure, but I don't know.
I'm almost positive you're right.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that has to actually enter into the autopsy report, which means someone has to actually make note of that or have asked that question for it to actually go into the autopsy report.
And the autopsy hasn't been released.
Correct.
Right. Wow.
Between Levi and I, we will get you the news, Michelle.
it's just, sorry, I started with the Casey Anthony case,
but I'm so used to darn covering
it. I'm saving that one for last.
I'm like, Elizabeth who? And then you send me an email with no Elizabeth Smart list on it, and I'm like, you know what? Let Levi have that one. Okay, let's move on.
Hey, you know what? We have to start on good notes around here. The Elizabeth Smart case was, you know,
that was
a prime example.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But that's a prime example of the work that we all do. You know, we all have our roles of what we try to accomplish. And with this particular show, this started on the Casey Anthony case when we were looking for Kaylee Anthony. And we want to have a voice for justice. But, you know, when you see a case like Elizabeth Smart, the one person that never gave up on pushing media to keep his daughter's face and case visible was Ed. You know, everybody else signed her off as deceased. And it was like nobody imagined that 9 months later that she would be found. And so now look at where we're at. Or the J.C. Dugard case.
Yeah,
so
for
us, you know, that watch news 24/7, it's mind-boggling to even fathom what some of these people will do to fulfill their agenda, whether it be on the Smart case or in this particular case, the Zahra Baker. It's just mind-boggling to think that parents could do that. But then we saw Shania Davis, you know, a year and a half ago, you know, and that particular case, how a mother can sell her own child for drugs, you know, and the last horrific picture that we have of that beautiful, beautiful baby girl was going into a hotel with some stranger, you know, and so for many of the people that listen to this show and the thousands of downloads we get each year, it's bringing home what you all talk about every day, you know, and that some of us see. But some people that listen to this particular show, they're not news junkies. Believe it or not, there's people that don't know who Nancy Grace is. So, you know, but it's mind-boggling, and what we try to get out to our listeners is, listen, there's some cases out there that are horrific, and if you're seeing a child being abused, there's no telling what that parent's capable of. You need to call somebody. And if nothing's happening, like in the J.C. Dugard case, DHS was called on that one numerous times and wrote that one off. And look where that got us 18 years later. That poor girl, that poor woman that has to go through that, and her two daughters, and we go back to the same thing with the system. And I know, Rosie, you work on the system a lot with, like, the Sarah Krasan case and others. You know, the system lets us down.
Right, but let's remember, you know, Sarah Krasan's case is very unique, and also, there are activists over there, and Kim Deanne is head of that organization over there for Sarah Krasan. They've been making a lot of headway, by the way. They're definitely getting, you know, this attention to the governor of California. And in order for Sarah Krasan's situation to change, I mean, it literally has to be a political hot-button issue. And, you know, that's something I spoke with their group about before, and they're actually making that happen. You know, Demi Moore jumped on board, and Ashton Kutcher jumped on board. So that's another positive and a move in the right direction. I mean, obviously, it's not easy to pardon a 16-year-old girl who was convicted of murder and also a prostitute, but we also know her background. We also know that she was trafficked. So a lot of details there, but in her case alone, there's definitely been some headway made, and that's definitely positive. you know, adding on to...
You want to fill some of our listeners in on Sarah Cruzan, because, you know, that's a hot button for Seroptimus also.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sarah Cruzan actually was abducted by the age of, and you can quote me on
11.
Some of it, 11. Right, and she was taken in by an area pimp, and when it comes to human trafficking, modern-day slavery, and the sex trade, I mean, it's such a broad, there's such a, so many different definitions that go into actual one topic, and with her situation, we can call it human trafficking, but basically the sex trade, she was taken in by a man that she trusted, a 30-year-old man, who in turn betrayed her and pimped her out. Later, she ended up killing her pimp, and she was a juvenile when she was tried and convicted of that murder, of murdering her pimp, and she got life in prison. So right now there's a movement against, not against rather, but a movement to try to get her pardoned, which is a very, very difficult task, because the judicial system and jurors don't look lightly upon ex-prostitutes who killed their pimps, although she was a juvenile, and we know the facts in the case.
Hmm. Interesting. Yes, we do know the facts in that case, and I know that many of us are in support of pardoning her, because as Dawn Schiller, who survived Porn King John Holmes, she is in our chat room, is indicating, you know, groomed at 11, sold on the streets by 13. And, you know, obviously we see how the system is great in a lot of cases, don't get me wrong, but it does fail folks in other cases. Does that mean murder should be all right? No, it shouldn't. But you have to remember, even at 16, she wasn't 16 in her mind, and she was trying to survive. So whatever the case may be, that's one particular case. I know maybe the new governor next year will be able to make things happen.
And Michelle, all's not lost. I mean, as soon as you make this a political issue, and this is something I talked about at Barry University, and, you know, I had the political science guy with his eyes just wide open. I'm like, you have to make this a political issue. And he says, well, you know, human trafficking is not that big of an issue right now. And I'm spewing out all these numbers, and I'm like, have you gone mad? Are you serious? This needs to be front and center of every politician in order for things to change, and in her case specifically for her pardon. Now, once it becomes a hot political issue, then you will start to see change, and that's why it's important for us to convene, and it's important for us to keep these stories out there and in their faces.
I agree, and that's another prime example how media matters, because I learned of that case by Lisa Bloom. So that is a prime example of how one can have a voice, and you don't have to be a reporter or a journalist or an attorney for that matter, like Lisa is, to make people aware of stories such as Sarah Cruzan. And you can there's a link on our Blog Talk Radio site, so please click that and find out more on the Sarah Cruzan case. For more information on Zahra Baker and Ronnie Chickson, et cetera, look to Levi Page's shows. I know he's done a few shows on all of those already. So, and Michelle just texted me. She should be on in a few minutes, so we'll run back through some of the stories that we've been talking on. But I know both of you are hot to trot on the Haley Cummings case. That is
I want you to finish on that, and I'm sorry if I keep interrupting you, but I'm actually just getting caught up with that case. That's something that I let fall by the wayside, and I'll tell you my personal sentiments on why I did that. So you may want to lean a little more to Levi Page on that one, just
giving you
a heads up, Michelle.
Okay. Levi, give our listeners a little quick rundown on Haley Cummings and how this poor girl's messed up family has taken the focus off of this young girl's missing.
Well, you know, I don't think that the family's taken the focus. I think in a lot of the dysfunction, I think that that's when we can actually get to the bottom, to try to find out exactly what happened to this girl whenever they're all involved in drugs, drug dealing and drug using. I think that helps us get to the bottom of it. But she went missing in February of 2009. She vanished from her own home, and the police have said that there was not an intruder. The crime scene was obviously staged, according to many people who've reviewed it, that the back door of the trailer was propped open, and we can't even get a straight story out of Misty Crossland. She says that the child was in bed with her. She says the child was in another bed 4 feet away. She can't tell the difference between 4 feet and 4 inches. Who knows what her story is, because she's told so many. She's also pointed the finger at a cousin who lives outside of Nashville. Her brothers pointed the finger at him. And now Misty Crossland said, you know what, I don't even think he did it. It was all a big dream. And, of course, they were all busted a year ago in a drug trafficking sting. Many, and they've all been sentenced to 25 years plus, except Ronald Cummings. He got a plea deal. We don't know exactly. Yes, he got 15 years. We don't know exactly what he did. We know that he's agreed to testify against others. We don't know if it's in Haley or the drugs. We know that he gave a proffer in the case, which is basically when you have someone who's been uncooperative and they've agreed to cooperate, you give them a proffer. And in this proffer agreement, they have to tell the truth. And if they don't, you can bring them back in front of a judge and sentence them to the max. So who knows what new information he gave up. And I know a lot of people think that he is innocent, but I just don't. I mean, the guy.
I'll have to agree with you, Levi. I'll tell you, let me just give you my background on that. And the reason, okay, when this case broke, I was there on the ground the first day. Now, I did not follow up with this case as much as I've stayed with the Casey Anthony case. This one was in North Florida. My area was Central South Florida, so I really didn't. But I just want to let you all know, I scoured that entire area. I saw the trailer. I saw the door. I saw the home. I saw that entire area. And I'll be honest with you, what kind of raises a red flag with Ronald, with me, and where I'll have to kind of agree with Levi, is that in the 911 call, he says, excuse my French, bitch, how could you let this have happened to my daughter?
Exactly.
You know, we can't forget that. Now, there's two things that happened there. He knows what happened, okay, or he staged that and said that, which, I mean, I believe the first of the two. I think he just knows what happened. And at this point, I mean, come on, guys, when you look at their activity after this girl went missing and
they
all
married.
The media hype, they got married and, you know, I mean, there was just so much drama. And then all of a sudden, we are still stuck. There is something seriously wrong with this investigation in this case. We are still stuck with where is Haley. We
and
have no tips on this girl.
And, Rozzy, you know, what's also interesting is the American public really has not got a full picture of what's happened in this case. We've seen Ronald Cummings on television crying his eyes out on Nancy Grace's show.
Going through attorneys.
She's a big supporter of Ronald Cummings for whatever reasons. I don't know. I'll leave that to her. But
you're
I
saying
know,
Nancy Grace is a supporter of Ronald Cummings?
Yeah.
She is. She is.
And what
yes.
Well, she
I'm
was
sorry.
Until he lied to her. He,
but wait
he
a minute.
Was
guys,
pretty
guys,
much
guys,
until
guys.
He lied.
In what capacity is she a supporter? I'm not understanding that.
She has always
she liked
very...
him from day one.
Yes.
Right, but
she liked him from
how?
Day one.
She felt
like,
sorry
how
for
him. How did she support him? How did she support him? This is what
well,
I
wouldn't
understand.
Say I wouldn't say that she was a supporter, but I will say that she's been very sympathetic to him.
Okay, sympathetic. Okay. All
and,
right. So a lot of times we have to. We, you know, we have to come together with these people, these victims or alleged victims that we don't
well,
even know are victims yet to find
well,
out what the truth is.
Let me
is.
Make this point. You know, I've heard from people, my sources down there on the that were there when he was giving interviews, and they said that he would give interviews, he would be crying, and the tears would immediately turn off, and then he would
yeah.
go along with his redneck buddies and go
yeah.
mud bogging right after. Now,
no, you're right. I don't know about mud bogging, but I do remember being here with all the Jacksonville stations, and I do remember being here with the networks, and I do remember all the interviews, and I do remember him getting teary-eyed, and then the tears kind of going away, and then him going off.
Alligator tears.
Yeah.
Alligator tears. I'm going to stop you both for a second. I think we have Michelle on the line. Michelle, are you with us?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, Michelle. Welcome to Voices for Justice. What we're on right now is the Haley Cummings case, and that's where we're at. We've covered Ronnie Chasen, Zahra Baker, and the Sarah Krasan case, and Elizabeth Smart. So we'll come back to you in a minute, but right now we're on the Haley Cummings case and talking about anything new. Levi Page was just filling us in on what is happening with that case.
Yes, and, you know, there's a lot going on behind the scenes right now that I can't tell you about, but because it seems that there are some people who are cooperating with law enforcement that are not considered main players in this case, and maybe they can get information out of some people. But I also just want to point on something else, is that Ronald and Misty went in front of the media very early on in the case, and they had said that they have failed their polygraphs. And I've talked to people close to this case, and they say that that was not – they said they passed. But I talked to people who are close to this case, and they said that that's absolutely not true, that they were both deceptive in the first polygraph they gave to law enforcement, Ronald and Misty.
Correct. That was exactly what I heard from other sources, or probably the same sources, that they have failed their polygraph every single time.
And we know
Michelle,
that,
did you hear anything on that?
Yeah, you know, when I first started covering that case a very long time ago, like you guys, thinking back to my conversation originally with a couple of the original investigators, I'm pretty sure that they did, in fact, not pass those polygraphs. And that was according to investigators at the time that were working directly on the case and working directly with them.
Yeah, and you know what's also interesting in this case is that Haley Cummings had missed so many school that if she had missed any more school, that she would have failed. And we also knew that there were a lot of rumors in the area, and many neighbors and other people have come out and said that Ronald Cummings was very abusive towards Haley Cummings. And a lot of the times, like we mentioned in the Zahra Baker case, when abuse is going on, they will pull the people out, their children, out of school. And Haley had missed so many days. If she missed one more day, Ronald Cummings would have been thrown in jail and tried for truancy.
Interesting.
Well, I found, wasn't it Geraldo Rivera that cornered Ronald at one point about abusing
tactic?
His daughter?
Yeah.
And I thought somebody called him on that. And that, here today, gone tomorrow. So where are we at with the search for Haley? I haven't heard her name mentioned at all in the last four or five months.
That's the problem. The last information I have is that Misty was sentenced to 25 years for drug trafficking and that Ronald Cummings was sentenced to 15 years.
January 11th, Misty Crossland goes back to court, and she faces over 100 years in Putnam County for drug trafficking. And
let me tell you about Putnam County. They are serious about this.
Yes,
I know the same.
And you know, Putnam County is basically the only good law enforcement in that area. The people searching on this case, the city police, from what I've heard, they're very in with Ronald Cummings' great grandmother Annette Sykes, who allegedly—I don't know—I haven't seen her do it, but I've heard that she was heavily involved in drugs in the area and has the police in her pocket. It's a very small town. It's been compared to the Old South. She goes to church with the police officers in the city of Wallaca, but Putnam County police are a good police force, and they're doing everything they can to solve the case, from what I've heard.
Right, that would be the sheriff's office, the Putnam County sheriff's office.
Do we know if Haley is perceived to be in that river or?
They searched the river, and they did not find any trace of her in that river. But
they
animal bones. Let's remember who led them to the river. That was Misty Crossland and Tommy Crossland, who they failed their polygraphs. They told thousands of stories.
Here's the problem. We have another case. I don't even know if we have another Casey Anthony or if we have, like, Casey Anthony times 10. I mean, this is the girl, Levi, that we just talked about that gave three different accounts, okay? And then she says, wait, this was all a dream. How delusional can you possibly be? And then she leads them to a river. Okay, they found some animal bones. Everyone got all excited about that, but we later learned they were animal bones. I mean, that was positive to me because Haley could still be alive. We don't know that. We don't have any information on that. We do know there's no more ground searches, and we do know that we don't have any more information on tips.
Yeah, and I've interviewed Misty Crossland on my show. I've talked to her off the air. She's very manipulative. She can try to make people believe
she's innocent,
very mousy, doesn't know anything. But this is a person who shows two sides. This is a little girl, 17 at the time, who, from what we've heard, she did not like Haley Cummings. She was very angry that she was in charge of babysitting her. She even had to celebrate her 17th birthday by babysitting Haley, and she was very angry about that. So when we have all these sort of people, Ronald, Misty, Tommy, around this child, I mean, who knows what happened? It's very unfortunate.
And you also have to think that, you know, Misty is a child herself. So you have a child sort of watching after a child and responsible for another child and making adult decisions when they are still childlike in mind. You know, so that's their major problem with that right off the bat, you know, and then kind of then turning into an adult relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you, Michelle, in regards to many of the cases that you have covered, where, like in this particular case, or like in the Elizabeth Smart case or Zara Baker case, where you're dealing with the victim they are a child, and then the people that are involved and being the criminal against them are childlike. How does one prosecute the individuals, like with the Elizabeth Smart case? We were just talking about that 8 years, and everybody was worried that he'd get off on technicality or something. You know, you cover a lot of these. What's your take on some of the cases we've spoken about today?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, in all of these cases, at some point, you get to the bottom of it. It may take a little bit of digging. It may take thousands of tips, like in Haley Cummings' case. It may take one person turning on another. There's so many different factors, but I think at the end of the day, and it may take years and years, you do get answers. You do get some sort of something somewhere that leads someone somewhere. You may not ever get closure. These victims' families may never, ever, ever get closure, but there is one thing that they can get, and that is justice if it's done the right way. You know, so a lot of times in investigations, that's why the theaters are very, very, you know, they're tight-lipped. And like, for instance, with the Ronnie Chasen case, but Beverly Hills Police, very tight-lipped up front. You know, even when there were all these other erroneous reports coming out and things like that, they sort of just let everybody say whatever they wanted to say, and they went on about their investigation. Whether that was the right thing to do or not, I'm not going to judge that, but, you know, they were having their information lined up in the back end. They were interviewing. They had the key players in the right areas, and they started getting that information and the tips and moving forward. Or even, for instance, in Zara's case, you know, one of the key clues to solving that case, obviously, what it appears to be, because she did admit to writing the ransom note, is the stepmother. So, you know, they already have her behind bars. They've already revoked the father's passport. They've got, you know, who they think could, I mean, again, no one's charged with anything yet, but, you know, they've got these sort of key players in the right places, and they can take their time with it to make sure that they don't make mistakes. And that's another important key, is just sort of having the ability to take your time, unless it's something they need to act on very quickly.
Let's shift a little bit. Right now we know, okay, Haley Cummings, we still need to find her. Do we all agree on that?
Yes.
She's still out there, despite what everybody, and I'm, you know, I was born and raised in South Florida, in Boca Raton and Coral Springs, and I'll tell you, I had a canal right out back. I've seen alligators up front, and I am so tired of hearing every time a child's missing in Florida, the alligators got them.
crock of crap. And so I don't believe that for a minute. So there's always hope. In this particular case, I'm not feeling that good, especially since the dogs hit on the garbage container that was in the backyard. I believe something transpired. I do believe that on that particular case. But to keep hearing that alligators are getting all of these missing kids in Florida, we can't think that until we have proof of that. Do we agree on that, Levi?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that we're going to get some action pretty soon because Misty Crossland is scheduled to be sentenced January the 11th. And she's expected to be sentenced when they add up all of her drug trafficking convictions to over 240 years in prison. And that's a lot to sit and think about when she's hammered in front of the judge. And she tried to play the sympathy card in front of the last judge, Judge Wendy Berger, who's a very conservative, very tough, very no-nonsense judge. She says, "I'm not a drug trafficker. They're only doing this because of Haley. I'm not a drug dealer." And the judge interrupted her during the testimony and said, "Yes, you are a drug dealer. You pled guilty. You are." She was not putting up with Misty Crossland. Misty Crossland even said that she had been raped, that she had a bad childhood, that her mother was not involved, her father was not involved. They were all on drugs. She got in with Ronald Cummings. Ronald Cummings beat her. The judge didn't have any sympathy for her and sentenced her to the max. And a lot of that is
because it's hard to have sympathy for people that continuously lie, especially when a child is missing at the hand of, obviously it was on your clock. So, you know, you keep lying and changing your story, it's going to be hard for a judge to have sympathy, which is a good segue. Michelle, I want to start with you. I was at a press conference this morning with Senator Ron Wyden and among others in Multnomah County here in Portland, Oregon. And, of course, the concern to bring Kyron Horman home was on all of our minds. What is the latest, and why do you think, with over 100 missing children in the Pacific Northwest, or I should say in Oregon and Washington, that this particular case has cost Oregon the most?
Because it is obviously that the fact that there's a little boy missing. I mean, that's the part that touches our hearts and a lot of the folks at home. But it's the backstory. It's everything that the family was dealing with that came to light, that was sort of like a soap opera that unfolded, that the public started latching on to. The alleged murder-for-hire plot, the sexting that went on after, you know, Kyron went missing, the fact that he was inside of Skyline Elementary School and that was seen there that morning and then suddenly vanishes, the dynamics between the mother and the father and the step-parent, especially at that very first press conference after Kyron went missing. Also, if you remember, after Kyron went missing, the family would not speak. There was a period of time, and if I'm not mistaken, it was 7 to 10 days, nothing was said. And people couldn't figure out why. So many folks that I talked to were like, "My gosh, if that was my kid, I would be standing on top of the rooftops and shouting it from the mountaintops and trying to figure out how to get my child's name out there." They weren't saying anything, and that was very bizarre to a lot of people up front. Maybe it's because they just didn't know how to respond. Now they do. Now you see Desiree out there as much as possible. You see Kane out there as much as possible. But at first, it seemed like maybe they didn't know how to respond, or they didn't know kind of where everything was. So I think right off the top, it was a little bit bizarre. And then from there, it's sort of unfolding into all of these crazy layers. And that's what people latched onto. And that's why it stayed in the forefront the entire summer. I don't think there were many days that went by that I didn't cover that case. Now it's starting to die off, of course, and there's all these other, you know, all these other cases are springing into action, and of course it's updated when major developments happen. But, you know, it's really sort of the family dynamics and the soap opera-like things that were going on behind the scenes that made it so popular. That's what I think.
I believe that the case could have been more proactive for Kyron if maneuvers, if you will, for divorce and things of that nature did not take place while your son is missing. I think if anyone's to blame for why the direction, like in the Haley Cummings case, why the direction went to the parents. Why? Because the parents were causing issues and causing different obstacles to come in the way of an investigation looking for their child. So in the same case, Kyron, if the focus was always Kyron and not money and child custody issues and things of that nature, I think the whole direction would have stayed focused. And that's what I'm hearing from the ground here.
But we could also learn a lot from their dysfunction. I mean, when you take a look at dysfunctional families, you can learn a lot from that and what might have happened. You can get clues from that. So I don't think the divorce proceedings is particularly a bad thing in this case. I mean, when they're slinging mud at each other, who knows what we could learn from that mud.
And the mud's only going one way right now, so.
And also, we weren't
some more to come on that one.
Police department and sheriff's office, of course, I respect whatever way that they want to move forward and handle it. They do things, they have their own reason and, you know, their own reasoning for doing things, and that's their, you know, that's what they choose to do. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, you know, really held back a lot. Been early on throughout, I mean, it's been a very, very, very tight investigation, especially when it comes to the public and media.
They did give a press conference 6 days ago, and the sheriff has said that he thinks that this is not going to be a cold case, and he thinks that he wants it. He said he wants it wrapped up before February 1st.
Which is a good deadline. I mean, that's really good to put that out there. You know, it's good to have that sort of that goal set in mind. And
I know that we work very closely with Multnomah County and Multnomah County Community Justice, as well as the sheriff's office. We do a lot out here with them, with the Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking and Seroptimus. And I'll tell you, if they're keeping things to the vest, maybe that's a good learning example for other law enforcement agencies, because what they may know may prove a success in finding Kyron. And you know, this is a prime example, and we'll start going into the Casey case from this. But, you know, when you're learning the majority of your information is not coming from law enforcement, then I think the public needs to sit back and wait until it all unveils itself, because I think public perception is a lot. You know, when Oprah tells you not to eat meat, she gets sued by the cow people, you know, and when Nancy Grace tells you Casey Anthony, you know, basically character assassination, she's guilty, what have you, everyone's going to follow suit. And I think sometimes what has to go out there is the truth. And that's why I like all of you, because I know that when you cover a story, you're after the truth and you're not after anything other than that. But in this particular case, like the Kyron Horman case, you haven't heard from sheriff's office that much. And the news that people are getting are from family that have not had permission from law enforcement to go out and talk.
And of course, I know that you believe this as well, Michelle, it's the Multnomah County Sheriff's. I mean, they have worked tirelessly on this case. I mean, I've spoken to investigators directly that were just, especially early on, I mean, around the clock, there were not breaks given, and they were out there pounding and searching and believing in their hearts they were going to find him, and that they still are. You know, so it's you know, great job to law enforcement in all these cases, because it is difficult, and they do give up so much of their personal time and energy and heart to go out there and to help find these kids.
Definitely, and I know that Jason was very, in the beginning of this whole case, I mean, he was losing sleep every day. And his team was just, they've been working endlessly, like you said, and tirelessly. And I think it's easy when you're watching television or the news to get an idea, especially if you're on the East Coast, get an idea of what's going on. But when you're right here living it, you see what what the search efforts and how people and how our meetings. I mean, we have meetings for other things and how draining a lot of the people around the table are. So I give credit to Multnomah County. I think that the outcome will surprise everyone on this particular case. And I really, truly believe that once it all unravels, and Kyron's home one way or another, I believe that many people will have wished, especially on their missing children's cases, that some of these detectives were on their case. We did bring in FBI on this particular case here, and I know, speaking with the sheriff and many others at Multnomah County, that a lot of people couldn't understand why. Well, you know what? It's great when you can put that pride in your pocket and say, we need some extra hands. We need some extra experts. Let's nick this in the butt and let's track this down. And so I give the sheriff and his department kudos on that. But I think everyone will be kind of surprised on this case and the outcome. But let's shift over to Casey Anthony, which I'm sure that many people listening today and all your fans, Levi, will be blogging away about me afterwards. As most of our listeners know, I went on to that particular case to help Mark Nijame and the grandparents of Kaylee Anthony. And that was my first missing person case that I have participated in, and now I've done 16. And I'll tell you, when you're representing politicians and nonprofit organizations and businesses by trade, and then all of a sudden you take on a case like this, it definitely drains you. So I can imagine what it does to investigators. The Casey Anthony case, you know, my biggest question right now is, why does the family think that Kaylee is still alive? And why did Cindy say that on the stand? Michelle?
Well, let's
okay, Rosie?
Go ahead, Michelle.
I spoke a lot already.
No, that's fine. I mean, honestly, Michelle, I understand you. I understand your frustration. I understand the question. But, I mean, you know, you're talking about, I mean, 3 years ago when I met Cindy Anthony, I knew something was wrong, okay? I mean, this is a woman that is, you know, to answer your question, and I'm not a psychologist, but there's one or two ways. Either she just really wants the world to think she's crazy, or she really is crazy, or she doesn't want to believe, and she doesn't want to come to terms with the fact that her granddaughter is dead. And that's just, I mean, honestly, you've met Cindy, you've sat with Cindy, I've sat with Cindy. There were so many times I would ask Cindy a question, she would answer it, I would ask the same question, and then she would answer it a different way. I mean, Cindy it has gone through hell and back, obviously, with this situation. She knows that she's quite possibly going to lose her daughter, which she never really had a relationship with in the first place. And she's lost her granddaughter. Her family's falling apart. I mean, George wasn't, I mean, we know he tried to attempt suicide at one point. He wasn't even in court last week. She was the only one that showed up. Lee Anthony's dropped off the map. You know, what insiders tell me is their whole family unit is completely broken up. So as far as her holding on to the fact that little Kaylee could still be alive, that just could be, you know, the level of her, maybe her slowly slipping into senility. I really don't know. But I know that my heart goes out to the poor woman. Maybe she really does. She believes she's still alive. But I think what's really important is what the facts are in the case right now and how it's progressing, because it's been progressing so slowly for so long.
So let's do this, because I know all three of you have worked this case. Pretend you're a juror, okay, and you don't know anything about the case, and take Jose Baez and all the circus clowns out of the picture for right now. What evidence would be on the table at this point that would have you believing she murdered her daughter if there was no you know, character assassination, if you didn't know her dancing on poles and all of that. I want to get a perspective from where media is coming from based on what you know to be true in the document release, which the majority of the document release, which is thousands and thousands of pages, a lot of that really doesn't – I look at it and I'm like, what's that supposed to prove?
Well, I think in short, you know, if I can take a stab at this and then you all can jump in, I think in short, the first thing you have to remember is the defense doesn't have to prove that Casey did not kill her daughter. They just have to prove, I'm sorry, Casey did not kill her daughter. That is the only thing they have to prove. So if they can just prove that someone, that something happened to her, no one knows exactly what happened to her, and point the finger in a different direction, and jurors believe that, then, I mean, there you are. So as far as the evidence, we don't even know what's going to be admitted into court at this point. And as far as what's in all that document, all those document dumps, I mean, Michelle, we get document dumps constantly. I mean, you have to go through them with a fine-tooth comb to even know what's actually going to be what's actually going to be admissible in court during trial.
Right. Levi?
Well, I would want to know, and I'd like to ask Casey this, and I'd like to get an answer. Why'd you wait 30 days to report your child missing? Wasn't even Casey that reported it. It was Cindy.
Right. It's the timeline factor. That's a big factor in this case.
I think that's going to be the hardest defense. That's going to be a hard thing for them to get over.
Michelle?
No, I agree. Not knowing the evidence that's going to be brought forward and sort of where all of that stands, the timeline speaks for itself. I mean, you can't deny that. And that's going to be the biggest hurdle in all of this. I mean, you have a child that's missing, you wait that long, and they're finally reported missing. I mean, that's a hard pill to swallow.
That is a hard pill to swallow for jurors. And ultimately, you know, when we have our legal eagles on and our legal experts, you know, they always say, but that doesn't prove that she did anything to her daughter. And then, you know, we have the autopsy report and we know that it was death by homicide, but we don't know that she, you know, we don't know the actual cause of death. And I mean, there's still so much forensics there that still has to come out. I mean, we still have Judge Perry, who just ruled last week that both the state and the defense are required to provide the experts their summaries and the subject that the experts will be testifying and their opinions. So we still have that. So we still have Baez that has to submit his expert witnesses list. I mean, there's still so much, and then we still have the 45 days from when the last motion was granted that they could send that DNA evidence that was in the shorts out to a lab to be reevaluated. So once all that comes back, I mean, then we'll have a clearer picture. But right now, I mean, we have pictures of Casey Anthony dancing on bars at 20-something, and we have some kooky story about Zanny the Nanny. But, I mean, all that stuff is going to come out in trial, and I mean, I can't speak for a juror. I don't know. But I do know there are people that don't know about this case, believe it or not. I mean,
out here don't know about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's going to be jurors that don't know about this case, and there's going to be jurors that are sitting there that are looking at this girl, and let's be honest, Casey Anthony's not an ugly girl. We've followed the case. We've seen her behavior. We see her sociopathic histrionic personality disorder characteristics, but they haven't. I mean, you know, all that will obviously come into play at some point, but, I mean, jurors, you know, blindly going in don't know that.
Definitely. And the trial goes in May. The trial starts. Do you now, some of the attorneys that Nancy has on seem to think that the trial will never happen. Why would they think that? Anybody know?
I disagree. Everything seems to be moving smoothly. And I'll tell you one thing about Judge Melvin Perry. I mean, he's the type of judge, if he could try this case in one day, he would. I mean, this is not Judge Strickland here, which, you know, no disrespect to Judge Strickland, but since Judge Perry has been you know, has been presiding over this case, we've seen things get done. We've seen deadlines get met, and now we're going to see this DNA evidence come back, and we're going to see the witness list come back on both sides from the prosecution and the defense, and we're going to see a lot clearer of a picture. So it's going to be less of a media field day and more substance. So I
sure wish they could finish it.
Yeah, I firmly believe that the trial date is set, and I believe we will go to trial. And I'm not an attorney, and I'm sure Nancy's attorneys would probably have a different opinion, but that is mine.
Anything else on Casey Anthony? Okay.
Well, I got something else on Casey Anthony. Actually, Michelle, this is actually comical. I out of the research that I do, I found a website, and you guys are not going to believe this, or maybe you will, because you know there's so many random things to bizarre things to believe in true crime. But there is a website, believe it or not, there are people so rogue that they sell T-shirts, mugs, mouse pads. Everything with little sayings, pictures of her on the T-shirt. They have the characters in the case, Leonard Padilla.
Oh, Lord.
It's absolutely bizarre. That was one thing I wanted to mention because
that's
I came
whole
across
show
the website,
itself.
And I could not believe people are actually
that's
capitalizing on this. Yeah, I mean, they're capitalizing
so
on this
up.
Before the trial. Anyway, yeah.
That is just so messed up. I mean, it's just really sad because, again, the focus was about a little girl, and again, people like that trying to capitalize off of Casey Anthony, pretty pathetic. Just with any of the cases, we've seen
you
that
imagine,
on a few of the cases.
Can you imagine what the trial is going to be like once it gets to trial? I mean, we had the circus outside the Anthony family home. We had what Rosie just said. I remember during the Michael Jackson trial, people were selling hot dogs outside the courthouse, people would go and put on a show. I mean, would that happen in this case? I don't know.
You know what? But Levi, absolutely. I believe it's going to happen. I sent you the link. It's so funny.
Yes.
I was talking to Levi the other night, and I sent him the link, and I said, you're not going to believe this. And, you know, he clicks on it, and it's all the characters. It's just beyond you. It's beyond me. It's beyond any reporter. It is a story that has a life of its own, beyond all of us.
That is true. That is true. And in another case that has continued, what has been 3 years now, you know, and it's going to be another year before we even start going through it. So these cases take a long time, and somebody has to pay for them. So it's so important for listeners and people that watch you three on television every night to understand that they too need to have a voice for justice, because unless they follow these cases, they really don't see how bad their taxes are going up to help cover some of these expenses, some of these big profile cases. And I want to remind listeners that we have Michelle Sagona, Rosie Franco, and Levi Page on with us tonight. We are talking about the news of 2010 and taking their views on how some of these cases have gone. And we are talking a lot on missing persons cases because that's what they cover a lot of, and that's what this show has covered a lot of. We want to have a voice for justice for the families and those missing. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. And again, if you want to meet Michelle Sagona and Rosie Franco, you can join us at the Northwest Conference Against Trafficking in January here in Portland, Oregon, which I hope you both, when you get here, you bring your cameras and your video cameras and all of that good stuff and try to help us find Kyron and have a hands-on with that case. Let's go back to a couple of the cases that we've heard a lot of this year, like Elizabeth Smart and J.C. Dugard. But there's been a lot of cases where women and girls, and Levi, I know you cover a lot on it too, but I know that Michelle and Rosie do a lot to be a voice for women and girls. A lot of the cases this year have been at the hands, which we would consider pedophiles or criminals, but yet they're at the hands of celebrities, and yet we let them off the hook. So I wanted to just explore a little bit, and I know you all are contracted by people, so say as much as you can, but like Brett Favre and Lawrence Taylor and individuals, or even for that matter, Charlie Sheen, okay? How many times are we going to continue to compliment instead of, prosecute some of the individuals that do harm to women and girls and constantly are let off the hook?
Well, wait a minute. I mean, you've kind of grouped these guys together, and when I look at each of their situations, I look at them differently. Charlie Sheen, I want to take out of the equation altogether. Now, when it comes to the athletes, and I'm not saying that he doesn't feel the same way, but I know dealing specifically with athletes, they feel superior. They feel they can get away with just about anything. As far as having a voice and keeping our voice out there, you just have to keep coming out with the information. I mean, when you introduced me, and I'll be a little bit clearer here, when you introduced me, Rozzy also broke the story against Randy Moss. I was very, very passionate about that story. There was a girl that was involved with Randy Moss, who we know is a highly paid athlete, very sought after athlete, with a crappy attitude. When he assaulted her in her home, he actually denied her care and told her she'd have to get to the hospital on her own. And then when I was contacted, I felt very passionate about that. I broke the story, and I took a big risk on breaking that story. But my point in saying that is I think to combat it and to just keep, is to just keep getting it out there, keep getting people aware, and keep your passion going. And when you're faced as a journalist with a decision, hey, do I go forward with a story like this that I know is going to blow up and possibly change people's lives, or do I, stay quiet and not say anything because, I don't want to be the person that's vilified? You choose the other option, and you say, you know what, I'm going to be a voice. I'm going to get out there, and I'm going to let people know that the Brett Favre's and Lawrence Taylor's are actually committing these crimes and doing these things.
Michelle?
Well, I think that these sorts of things are happening every day in regular people's homes, not necessarily superstars, not necessarily athletes, not necessarily someone that, is able to have the public eye on a daily basis. So when things happened and athletes are involved and they are charged and they, are not convicted, but it sort of brings the topic and the issue to the light, it also is sort of a twofold because it gives everyone a chance to take that and to educate the public as, whether it's a domestic violence issue or whether it's, a different kind of issue. I think, a lot of this sort of, not a lot of it, but sometimes it stems back towards domestic violence. And so as a, as a journalist or as a reporter, I think what some could probably do is sort of maybe take that information, and if you want to highlight the case, fine, but put an educational safety spin on it as well. Because I think there's so many regular people who are sitting at home and who are victims and who are too afraid to step up to the plate or have a voice for themselves or know what to do or even to recognize those red flags, the early red flags from early on, the mental, the emotional, the verbal, which leads to the physical and sometimes death. So there's very specific things that happen. And I just think that sometimes that these teenagers and other women just aren't aware of them. And so if they're sort of latched on to these other cases that are making the spotlight and making the headlines, then maybe we should take more time to put out those flags and those warning signs to latch onto it, whether they are guilty or not, but kind of make it as a side educational piece.
So let me ask the both of you, and then I'll go to Levi on this. As a journalist, does your story change based on being a freelance journalist to being a contracted journalist?
No.
Rozzy? No?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, what your role is. Listen, I left Clear Channel in March. I didn't leave my reporting skills. I just basically decided to go on as a freelancer so that I could open myself up and move about and report with different media markets and with different media channels. But that doesn't change the nature of my reporting. If that's your question, I mean, you have to triple check every single source. I know a lot of bloggers do this. But, I mean, you know, you've got to call the investigator, you've got to call that spokesperson, and you've got to get around them, too. I mean, you've got to find out the people surrounding that story, and you've got to get, you know, to the story the best way that you can. I mean, whatever your role is in the field should never change the quality of your work.
Yeah, and the quality, you know, exactly. As a journalist, I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, where you are as a journalist. It's, you know, you practice all sides and you work as hard as you can to get the most accurate information to bring to the table and to let the viewer kind of make their own decision and to have them digest the story. But in the same token, it's, you know, when I have a passion to help people, for instance, just like all of you do. And, you know, you really want to take that extra time and go that extra mile and hold the victim's hand or guide them to a place, or, you know, if someone writes in, you want to be able to guide them to the right area, to the right resource, because there's a ton of great resources out there. I mean, my goodness, for not just domestic violence, but rape victims, and there's so many, so many nonprofits out there and so many people that give so many hours of wonderful time to so many great services to help people. And, you know, it's also helping to give them a voice as well, to get to those victims that need the help. So I think that's extremely important, is to reach those people that really need the help. And that sort of
Levi,
need to have
how different is it, be passionate about it. Levi, how different is it for someone that started a show on Blog Talk Radio that now you're finding, you know, a lot of your guests are professionals, you know, whether they're serving as prosecutors or defense attorneys to bounty hunters to all of that. How do you find that your show differs for some of these cases than, you know, some of the national syndicated news shows?
Well, for one, like your show, what we're doing right now is we're talking and there's no commercials and you don't have to put everything in a 20-second soundbite and people get more of the full story.
You know, also, Michelle, to add on to that, like with sort of what Levi does, and it's really interesting because when I learned, because Levi started kind of making his presence known in the true crime area, and when I learned about Blog Talk and kind of tuned in, what I learned is that a lot of his following and a lot of his listeners are people that are just very passionate, and they just want to be a part of the story. And sort of what he does with his Blog Talk show, he kind of brings you in and invites you in that discussion, which, you know, is much different, obviously, when you're on a show and you're a person watching five talking heads talking and no one's getting your point across. Well, with his show, it allows, and also with this show, Blog Talk allows people to get their point across and ask questions via chat room and be more interactive. So I think that's kind of the difference there. Instead of a hard report, you get that conversational aspect, and you're able to be more interactive with the host and also other participants that are interested in the investigation and the story in that particular true crime.
Like Levi said, you know, there's not someone sitting behind a computer with a rundown saying, okay, you've got a heart out, you've got 22 seconds left. we need to go to break. You know, when we come back, we're not going to cover this story. We're going to cover the next story.
Yeah.
And sort of mapping out a rundown ahead of time. It's a little bit more flexible. It's a little bit easier. It's got a little bit more room to kind of wiggle for other topics. You never know. I mean, you know, one topic, as you know, Levi, can lead you in a completely different direction, and your whole entire show may change. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, what she's saying is like when you're sitting there and you have the IFB in your ear and you're here in the control room and all of a sudden you're about to talk about something, you know, on the case and then, boom, you're moving to a different case. So,
yeah, so like a verdict just came down, the Elizabeth Smart trial, what we need to put immediately, you know, and then your whole entire focus just kind of goes into something different and you're in a different headspace at that time.
Exactly. So Blog Talk allows you to move into just deeper into the topic. I mean, you know, we've talked around a lot of different facts tonight, you know, amongst the four of us on all these different stories that would probably not even get covered in, you know, in the A or B block on one of the shows. But, you know, those are great shows and they're very informative and they are also interactive as well. I mean, both Jane, Nancy, I don't think Joy takes callers, but, you know, Mike Alano, they all take callers, so people are able to, you know, get involved with that as well.
Which is great. Yeah.
We have a few minutes left with all of you. Can you tell me a little bit about anything that's on your mind? I know there's so much news every single day and it's so much to try to cover. We have so many cases we work with here. I know right now I see four survivors in the chat room. I've got callers listening. The switchboard's lit up listening to the show. One in particular, her sister's been missing since 1971, Jamie Grissom. We have Melissa Baum, whose daughter's been missing for a year and a half. One platform for this particular show has always been, it does allow more time for families and survivors to speak out. The number of downloads we had recently from outing Bill Hiller, who is a fraud, or Jackie Hollander, the victim of James Brown, the downloads are major. And so obviously we do give them that opportunity. But I want to give you each a minute to talk on any cases that are personal to you or cases that really took a lot out of you. Michelle, why don't you start?
Well, for any listener that's listening right now that has a loved one that is missing, a case that is unsolved, something that has not been, you have not been brought justice yet, do not lose your faith. Do not lose hope. Do not lose your sight. Because if you just keep believing and knowing that it's going to come, eventually with a lot, you know, a little bit of time, a lot of prayer, and a little bit of patience, you know, I've seen it time and time again. I've seen cases solved within 24 hours. I've seen cases solved. It's taken 30 years. So the justice may be a little bit further down the road, but just don't lose your faith and don't lose your hope. That's sort of just on one token, and that's always kind of the stance in something like to keep in the back of my mind when covering the cases and working with the families. But on the other hand, one thing that's sort of been bothering me a lot recently, especially these last few weeks, so many of these parents allegedly murdering their children. It's been off the charts, I feel, the last couple weeks in particular. But also, just it's so bothering to me. I don't know. I just don't know how, you know, if these parents are in fact guilty of doing these sorts of things, you know, how they could even think about doing something like that to their child. But that's sort of one of the things that has been on my mind a lot lately. There was a case out of Florida, and I needed to check up on the update of it, but it was two little girls, I think they were 6 years old, they were twins, a little boy and their mom were all found murdered inside of their house. And I don't even think, I think maybe I did one national hit on it. You know, so I think it's those kinds of cases lately that it's just, you know, something you may have heard about like that 5 years ago would have been all over the place. Now it's just barely a blip on the radar.
Wow. And that's in South Florida?
Yes. That was I have to go back over my notes, but yes, that was in Florida.
One of the biggest complaints on the Kyren case. We had so many emails come in saying, why is that case so different than my daughter's? Why does he have 30 billboards and we haven't even had one? How do you answer a parent who has been looking for their son or daughter, or in the particular case like with Susan Powell, Chuck and Judy Cox? You know, it's like some of the things that the sound bites don't pick up is, you know, that husband, Joshua, moved down the street from them in Washington. So it's not just the power trip of I'm not going to tell you where your daughter is, even if I knew. Now I'm living down the street from you and you can't see your grandchildren. And that hasn't, you know, come out. And it's like, how do you really support grandparents that are breaking every minute of the day? So it's cases like that. It's just mind-boggling. Just mind-boggling.
It's very sad. But, you know, one thing I can tell these families out there, if you are listening and you have, you know, you have a case or you need help or, you know, we're all here. We can all help guide you. You know, hold a vigil on the birthday. Get out there and contact your local newspapers. Contact your local news. Find a reason to get that story back out in the spotlight. Work with those investigators. Don't let it die. Just because investigators may not have anything or they're not moving forward, it doesn't mean that you have to stay still. You can keep moving that forward. You just got to get out there and develop relationships with the assignment desk, you know, for the news organizations in your area, and to be able to get an update on when something happens, or if there's a parallel case, put your child or your missing or your loved one back out there again. You know, there are definitely things that you can do as, you know, as a family member to help keep that case out there without just relying on the investigators.
Definitely. And again, for our listeners, you can see Michelle Sigona often on CNN, HLN, MSNBC, and Inside Edition, and get to know her and all of what she's writing about at michellesigona.com. Thanks, Michelle, so much for being
Thank
with us.
You.
And for anyone wanting to meet Michelle, please come on out here in Portland, Oregon, January 14th through the 16th. Michelle will be presenting a workshop on internet safety. So we look forward to having you out here, and we wish you happy holidays, Michelle.
Well, Michelle, thank you
Levi,
for all you do.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you so much. Levi, any last thoughts, anything that bothers you on some of the cases that you cover?
Yeah, I think that there's a breakdown in our system a lot of times. We just talked about the Zara Baker case and how many people went to Department of Children's and Families, Social Services, and reported child abuse, and I think that has to stop. I don't think that it's child services that we should go to, but whenever a parent is smacking, hitting, abusing their children, that's a crime, and you need to go to the police rather than social services. You know, let social services investigate, you know, the parents that are hoarding and whether or not that's a problem for the children. But whenever they're beating someone, go to the police, not social services.
Good point. Very good point. Any of the cases that you cover that we may not have spoken about that you want to get out there, or any shows coming up that our listeners can tune into?
Yes, next week we're going to be taking a look all next week at some of the biggest cases of 2010, and Monday night we're going to take a look at the Anthony case. Tuesday night we're going to take a look at the Kyren Horman case, Wednesday night the Zara Baker case, and Thursday night the Haley Cummings case. But also another case that I wanted to talk about is the Amanda Knox case, and she's going to appeal her guilty verdict and 26-year sentence in Italy. And in Italy, even if the appeals court rules against her in the guilty verdict, they still have the power to decrease her sentence. And all of the experts there in Italy say that Amanda most likely is going to have her sentence lowered by a couple of years if they don't completely reverse her guilty verdict. And in Italy, an appeal is basically a new trial. Both sides go in there and they argue their case. They put up witnesses, And the good news for Amanda Knox is that Italy has a very high reversal rate when defendants go in front of an appeals court and appeal their cases, which means that it's very common for the appeals court in Italy to overturn the lower court's guilty verdicts and sentences. And there's been a lot of new developments in that case. We know that a member of the Spanish Mafia has came forward, and he claims that his brother murdered Meredith and disposed of evidence and had him dispose of evidence, including the car keys of the victim, Meredith Kircher. And we also have another guy that's a child molester, a child murderer, who says that one of the co-defendants, Rudy Guade, said that Amanda Knox is totally innocent. You know, what's the credibility of those people? Are they trying to get their 15 minutes of fame, insert themselves into a high-profile case, or is there some grit to what they're saying? And then also look at the DNA labs, the forensic labs there in Italy.
Or the lack of.
Yeah, their reputation lags behind all the other labs in Europe, especially when it comes to DNA certification. Their handling protocols and all their databases is basically crap from all the local reports in Seattle that are reporting on this case. And we know that the investigators, they didn't even change the gloves after handling evidence in the case. Their records were incomplete, and we know that the bra clasp of the victim had the fingerprint of one of the co-defendants on it, and they didn't even collect that bra until 46 days after the murder. 46 days after. That would not be allowed to be entered into the evidence here in the United States. And they also found a knife that had Amanda Knox's DNA on it, and that DNA was such a very small, minute amount of DNA.
Yeah.
It was a very low amount that it couldn't even be produced again. So it's not even considered a match.
Hey, Michelle, I'm really sorry, but I have to go. Thank you so much for having me on, and thank you for having me with the discussion. And Levi, you have a great night. Michelle, you have a great night. And you all have a great
night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rosie.
Thank you.
That case definitely has been a case that we've been following. We've had Ann Bremner on. Ann Bremner will also be at the conference in January. And, again, you know, we just want, justice to prevail. If she did the crime, she deserves to serve the time. But in that particular case, if I was a juror, you'd have to prove it to me at this point because lack of DNA. Nobody could do that crime in that room and not leave your hair or anything behind. And that's a prime example of how to act 101. You know, don't be kissing your boyfriend and doing cartwheels, because God forbid that will come back to haunt you.
I think is interesting in this case is, Michelle, is that Amanda could be guilty, but the fact that they've contaminated so much stuff, the prosecutor in this case is even behind bars for unethical behavior in his past cases, trying cases in the media. You know, they could have made a case against Amanda Knox without going beyond the pale. And I think they really screwed up this case, and if she's guilty or innocent, we may never know, but they've screwed it up so much that she could walk, and who knows if she's guilty or innocent. I don't know. I don't know the facts, but I do know that this was handled in an inappropriate way, the labs, the investigation, and the prosecutor.
Well, that's definitely a case to watch in 2011 as things start progressing. Levi Page can be heard 5 nights a week at blogtalkradio.com/Levi Page. Tomorrow night's show is on Casey Anthony, so all of our followers that are following that case, tune in tomorrow evening. And you can also see him on Jane Velez Mitchell on HLN and Nancy Grace's show from time to time. Thank you, Levi, and keep up the great work. I mean, I am not a fan of too many bloggers out there, but you do speak the truth, and we do we like your show. So thank you so much for being
a
voice for justice. And then we
have
Rosie. Thank you, Levi. Rosie Franco that had to leave us, visit her at rosiefranco.com. She, too, can be seen time to time on Issues with Jane Velez Mitchell, among others. And both she and Michelle will, again, and I'll keep pushing that, will be back out here in
January 14th through the 16th. And so I leave you by saying, Helping Heroes, you know, we're here because we want to be a voice for justice. The show highlights those making our world a better place to live through media, community, and lending a helping hand. However you do it, we want to talk about it. The show explores the news and cases, entertainment, and life happenings that make headlines around the world. I want to also give thanks this year to many artists that lent their voices to our show. If you hear some of the music, that music was either written for a missing child or for this show in particular. Sue Riney, our governor from Seroptimus International, the Northwestern region, Meal, that you heard this evening and that we'll close the show with, is, and Michelle Weiss. Your music will continue to be the voices for justice for those missing and for all those doing good in our communities. And again, I want to plug Seroptimus International and our third annual Northwest Conference Against Trafficking, January 14th through the 16th in Portland, Oregon. In addition to Michelle and Rozzy, we will also be having on January 15th at 6 p.m. At the Convention Center in Portland, we will host a Vigil for Hope. And confirmed right now are Susan Powell's parents, Chuck and Judy Cox, Melissa Baum, mother of Lindsay Baum, who's been missing since she was 10 years old from McCleary, Washington, Star Laura, the sister of Jamie Grissom that's been missing from Vancouver, Washington since 1971. Star has never given up hope, and nor have we. And so we're working each day with Clark County Sheriff's Office on that case. Teresa Lewis, whose daughter's been missing for 4 years, Tika Lewis. Kyron Horman's family has been invited, and we hope that his grandparents at least will be there. And for information, go to nwcat.org. That's nwcat.org. If you'd like to register, it's nwcat.eventbrite.com. Michelle Inley, any last thoughts? You're our last caller on the line. We look forward to having you here in January, definitely.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to being there, and I just thank you for all you do. And you, you're always working around the clock and to help so many people. So that's just want to take a moment to thank you for your time and your heart and your dedication and your just your passion, your true desire and passion to help others. So thank you, Michelle, for all you do. And keep up the great work.
Oh, thanks, Michelle.
And thanks for letting me be a part of tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You need to join Seroptimus.
Absolutely.
We have a great one out your way. And wasn't it your grandmother that once was a Seroptimus?
I have to ask her.
Ask her. I think we had that conversation once.
Okay.
But seriously, you know, okay. Seriously, though, this show is, it definitely does have its purpose, because I'll tell you, it is the media. They're wonderful. I work with them day in and day out on so many different issues, and it's hard to put a family that's missing their loved one on, as Levi and Rozzy and you had stated, and they mean well. They're on there, and then all of a sudden, you know, they go to commercial, save that thought, and you're dealing with family members that have never dealt with media, and it's very difficult for them to get their story and the case and face visible. And so we definitely do have our purpose, and I think we have one caller. Let me just make sure. Caller, you're on the line. Do you have a question for Michelle Sagona?
Hi, this is Star Laura.
Hi, Star. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine. I just wanted to thank Michelle for mentioning Jamie. I really appreciate it.
Jamie's always in my thoughts.
I know. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you, Star. Jamie's search was one of the search efforts that I participated in with Clark County Sheriff's Office here. And you know, it definitely is a difficult time when you don't know what's going to be found. And so don't give up the hope.
Support out there. You know, I would have been alone, basically, if you hadn't been there. So, you know, I haven't forgotten that, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Star. Thank you so much. And for those listening, if you want to learn more about Jamie's case, go to helpfindjamiegrissom.com, and her website's up and running. And in that particular case, the person that her family believes did the crime or knows something about the disappearance of Jamie in 1971 from Vancouver, Washington, is set for, 2014?
Yes, that's right. That's when I first...
He's up for release?
Yeah, he's up for release in 2014. And,
so we definitely need to solve that case so that man stays behind bars because, correct me if I'm wrong, your family does believe that he did that crime.
Yeah, and he was already convicted of one murder and brutal attack. Another murder and attack, he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. So, I mean, there's four attacks right there, and to think that a guy like that could get out, two murders and two attacks, he wouldn't stop. I mean, there's a very scary thought.
Yeah, so a lot of things, you know, sometimes you got to pull that political card, like our panel had been stating earlier, and that's a particular case that, yeah, the political card needs to be pulled and people need to have their voices heard. So we're posting helpfindjamiegrissom.com in the chat room for the few people left, and then we'll definitely make sure that we post it on Facebook tonight, Star.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you in Portland also.
Yes, I look forward to being there.
Thank you, Star. You have a nice night. Thank you.
You too. And thank you, and I hope you have a safe night, Michelle, and thanks again.
Thank you. You too, Michelle. Thank you so much. And again, thank you, everyone, for joining us. Happy holidays, and thank you all for your continued voice for justice. We return in 2011, and until then, remember, you can be the change you wish to see in the world. How are you going to make a difference this holiday season? Lend a helping hand to somebody that needs it. Good night, and thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And here is Sue Riney, All Good Gifts from Godspell. Thank you.
now.